In the podcast room of the Geek Gala HQ, there are assembled Charlotte, North Carolina's four okayest geeks, created by the cosmic legends of their own mind. Starnslord, the Giddy Geeker, Carol the Cat, Tipples Tannenbaum. Their mission, to support local, to discuss all things geek, and to serve all fankind. They are the Guardians of the Geekery, the official podcast of the Charlotte Geeks.
I imagine this is the music that you would get married to, Carol.
What?
It has crossed my mind, actually.
Episode 237.
Don't open the door to room 237.
Just don't go in there. Just don't. Why not, Mrs. Starnes? Because I fucking said no.
Tony, who?
I still think it's funny that it's the same music as Sleeping with the Enemy.
Well, like, it's Bella Bartok. Bella Bartok wrote some very heavy, dread-filled music.
You think so? Very. It kind of sounds like the music I used to play on the piano when I would come in all as an angsty preteen. Be like, so, bomb, bomb, bomb.
In case you haven't realized, we took a trip to the Overlook Hotel.
Overlook Hotel. Not in England, though.
No.
And not in Oregon. Not even in Colorado.
No.
We took it right here in Charlotte, North Kakalaki.
Yes, so we watched The Shining.
Shining.
One of my favorite Halloween movies.
Shine on Harvest Moon.
That is no. Not.
Me and my gal.
That was not a part of this. That was a totally.
Was that the after credit scene I missed?
Since January.
Oh. That might have been.
It could have been part of that gold room.
The gold room, yeah.
Know, right? All right, so we watched The Shining. And much to our delight, we watched it with Matt real time. Who said, oh no, here we go, oh no. And then at one point reached over and clenched my hand, and I tried to get Carol's attention to point out that he was clenching
my
hand.
No, I noticed it.
But then I noticed
you hiding behind your fingers.
Well, yeah. Spoiler alert.
Okay.
Somebody dies, and I know that they're going to die, and I happen to like the actor as an actor, although he's dead now. But.
Okay, so spoiler alert. We're going to spoil the movie for you, but it's The Shining, and if you haven't seen it,
you've had a few chances.
This is the Jack Nicholson,
1980.
Shelley Duvall movie.
Not the Shining. The miniseries.
Stanley Kubrick.
The Stanley Kubrick film. Although, you know, really, let's call it the Shelley Duvall film. That poor woman.
She was not treated nicely.
Well, not only that, but like, really, she's the only one until the very end that's sane.
And
like,
and
isn't already predisposed to weirdness.
Some sort of weirdness.
Yeah.
So why do you think she was able to see that at the end? It was just all the two
because
shining,
the
dad and the kid
the
and
house,
the house, and it
the
just
house
all
revealed
converged,
itself or? To her.
Okay, yeah.
Because they realized he wasn't strong enough.
But was it like the dad and Danny being shining so much that it opened that for
that
her
could
to see?
And then, of course,
I can't remember
Halloran's
the novel.
Death.
But
well, this movie very much does not follow the actual book.
No, in
it
a bunch
takes
of
bits
ways.
And pieces, yeah. But this is basically Kubrick's
version.
The Shining, not necessarily Stephen King.
What are the
King's.
Big differences? Because I assume you read the book.
Yeah, Halloran actually doesn't die in the book.
Okay.
He saves them at the very end and takes them on the snow cat.
Okay.
Down to Sidewinder. Jack does not freeze to death. The boiler actually explodes and takes a part of the hotel with it. Mm. There's differences between how Jack reacts to the thing with this movie. Mm-hmm. Jack is Jack Nicholson, and Jack Nicholson seems crazy from the get-go.
Right. Yeah. Like, one of the issues was, and I've read this in the IMDb, IMDb. I'm not going to try to act like I'm all knowledgeable. but I had heard about this too, because being from New England, Stephen King was kind of our a well-known author for us up there as well. But the point was to really have, in Stephen King's version, Jack was a likable dad.
Mm-hmm.
And then Shelley Duvall's character of Wendy was more like the cheerleader blonde. And then, and has never had to deal with anything. And then she watches her, you know, kind of like father knows best husband descend into alcoholism and a form of, you know, hell that she's slowly becoming aware of.
Yeah.
And she's having to deal with it all as somebody who's always just had everything taken care of. And, you know, definitely Shelley Duvall's version or Kubrick's version with Shelley Duvall was a much more fragile character from the beginning. Like, you already know there's a problem with her when she tries to make no big deal out of the fact that her husband
dislocated her son's arm
just by ripping on it.
Which he does in the book, but he openly admits that he had an alcohol problem and he was in AA and he was getting treatment for it. So it's not like, you know, here he kind of hides the fact that he had an alcohol problem.
And the doctor who's looking at Danny after his first episode that we see on film is like, just like looks horrified. But I'm like, you actually have to report that even back then to the authorities.
Yeah.
I mean, back then you had to, but it's just
why he lost his teaching job in the book is because it was reported and he did have an alcohol problem and he had to actually stop teaching. So
That's good to know, because I'm like, you
never really get that.
I mean, at the time that this movie came out, it was so defining as a horror movie. But when you go back and watch it here in 2018, a lot of those little details that would have been filled in somehow today
are just kind of left.
Yeah.
They're just kind of, it's a very Stanley Kubrick film because he doesn't explain everything.
Yeah. Jesus. He doesn't explain hardly anything. Like,
have you seen 2001?
Right. I mean, like, there's a scene and I had noticed this and then they mentioned it again. But, you know, in the book, it actually talks about the scrapbook that Jack finds with all the pictures and all the information. Mm-hmm. And all in the Kubrick film, you see it. You see a scrapbook beside the typewriter, and you see what looks like may have been pictures. And it's the fact that, you know, at the beginning of the film, they talk about the incident in 1970, but really it goes back from the beginning, from 1920. It's more than one time that this happens. So. Yeah.
And I think the book is a lot more paranormal than this movie is, because if you look at the movie and you watch the movie critically, there's only one actual paranormal incident that can't be explained by they're crazy and they're hallucinating. And that's the fact that somebody opens the door for Jack when she locks him in dry storage. Other than that, you can say they're all going cabin crazy and they're seeing things.
Right.
But that's the only instance where
in the movie
where there's just no that has to be supernatural.
Someone had to get the pen out.
Yeah.
And
somebody had to open that door for him. In the book, there's a lot more supernatural underlines because it was built on an Indian burial ground.
Yeah. And, you know, as I was watching this, even though Stephen King really has a hard time with anybody
adapting his work.
Adapting his work.
And
because
he can't adapt it for a shit. So.
Right. Yeah. You know, but I think it is hard. You see it in your head one way and you want to get it out on paper. And there's just a general frustration because you can't, because you can't connect it. But it reminds me a lot of Rose Red, the miniseries, because of the fact that the house is actually the character, and in this case, the hotel is actually an underlying character. Even in Kubrick's version, the house is the character. So,
and there's weird things with the hotel in the movie version,
right?
I mean, at the very beginning, when he goes into the hotel manager's office, there's a window that cannot be explained because that office is right in the center of the hotel.
Yeah.
And it's like, well, how is there a window there that's viewing the outside?
Yeah. Quick side note, there were so many lights used to make it look bright outside the hotel on the soundstage that it actually burned part of the set.
That doesn't surprise me.
Yeah. So, but yeah, I mean, now the story is, and this is not just from IMDb, but the story is that Stephen King was inspired by this when he and his family stayed at Estes Park in Denver, Colorado, and they actually got snowed in. And there was a rock group that was also snowed in for those 3 days. And I forget who the rock group is, but if you look it up, it is like a known thing. But I know she's looking it up now. So Estes Park is supposed to be kind of it. Now, the Overlook Hotel has the maze, and Estes Park does not. But in the book doesn't have a maze either. The book actually has shrubbery that's in the form of
topiaries.
Topiaries in the form of animals, and the animals come alive.
But seems like Stephen King.
Yeah. I've always dreamed of having a yard like that. Side note.
The maze or the topiary?
Having fancy shrubbery.
Yeah, if you listen to the podcast S-Town, the guy that was in that actually built a maze in his backyard, and it's like, there's certain doors you open or close, and if you open those doors and close, it changes how you can get in and out of the maze. So,
interesting.
He was kind of crazy, too. So people with mazes get kind of crazy. But yeah, so Estes Park does not acknowledge too much that that's the hotel that it was based on.
It's the Stanley Hotel.
Stanley Hotel in Estes Park, and Stanley steam-powered cars. That's that same family, not the Stanley steam engine vacuum. But but yeah, if you go to Estes Park, you can actually park in their hotel lobby for a small fee, but they give you a souvenir coin because,
that's cool.
Very cool.
But they've removed room 237.
It's
now like a closet because too many people were stealing like the sign off of it and stuff like that. And
keys, I'm sure, before they went completely digital.
Yep. Which 237 was not the room that Stephen King stayed in. He stayed in 217.
So yeah, there's a lot of differences between the book and the movie. They did do a mini series that was closer to the book, but was not well received. It has a tendency. The thing about Stephen King's work is when Stephen King adapts it, because I think he did actually do the mini series, it doesn't quite work out.
Yeah. It's hard. Because a director doesn't feel that they have the freedom to switch it up. And I think it's a challenge. I mean, I think that's why somebody like Peter Jackson is so amazing, because of the way I understand The Hobbit. But the fact that he was able to get, The Lord of the Rings done the way he did with such love. Yeah. But then you're going to have the Peter Jackson takes The Hobbit and makes the short book into three parts, because that's what he's been asked to do. And people are going to complain and think that storylines don't fit. But then you have me, and I'm like, it's fine. So I am not a horror person. And even though there's definitely scary parts of it, it's not the horror, like, gore kind of thing.
Yeah, it's not gore. There is, like, a couple of gory scenes. You see the little girls, the twin girls who have been murdered by their dad.
Right.
And then there is the elevator, the infamous elevator scene, which is... But that's so over the top. It's not even gory anymore. It's just a pool of blood coming out of the elevator. Right,
which took a year for him to approve it.
Yeah.
And it took 9 days to set it up every time they set it up, which is crazy. In the bathtub scene, which I have to admit, I don't remember seeing, because I've always watched
watched the edited version where they cut out
that part.
They cut out they cut out the pretty lady standing up because she's nude.
Yeah.
I think they keep the actual. They don't even keep the backside.
No, they keep that whole part out. The whole part about that's where Danny was, and then him coming up and saying there was nothing there.
That's unfortunate, because that room is actually kitschy 70s awesomeness.
Yeah.
With purple and green.
But that was the one and only. We were talking about whether or not Danny Lloyd had appeared in anything else. That's the little boy in The Shining. And he actually did appear in one other, we found out. But both the old lady and the young lady for the bathtub scene never appeared in anything again, and had not appeared in anything before.
Huh.
She just looked a bit naked.
Yeah, imagine that you just make a choice that your only film role will be you nude.
Standing up naked in a bathtub in The Shining.
That's bold. But Stanley Kubrick is known for ultimately taking hundreds of shots
and takes and just over and over and over. And we were talking about how he just wore down Shelley Duvall.
Yeah.
Because he was miserable to her, and he like made the crew
not acknowledge
her at all.
It was effective because, I mean, she was just miserable and you could feel that.
Yeah.
You know,
and I don't think Shelley Duvall is the best actress in the world. She has that kind of, I don't know, she has a quality about her that is just kind of cloying at times. I don't know.
Yeah, there is a movie with Sissy Spacek and Shelley Duvall where Shelley Duvall is trying to be all popular and act like she knows everything. And Sissy Spacek is the girl from out in the country. And Shelley Duvall is probably at her most annoying, but that's exactly what she's supposed to be.
Yeah. Oh,
okay. And it's that was probably the most impressive Shelley Duvall movie.
And then
besides
Popeye,
The Shining.
Yeah. Then Popeye, she fit physically.
Yeah, and her voice.
And really, voice, yeah. But the movie, unfortunately, sucked.
Just
but
bad. Yeah. I don't. Yeah,
just
I don't
dull.
Think
just she's, dull. More than
she's
anything.
Had some success behind the camera. She's had more success behind the camera than in front of it. Here, she was just. I mean, by the end of the film, she physically just looks done.
Yeah.
And I don't think that was acting at all. I think she was just physically done.
No, they actually said that she felt like she needed to go to a therapist afterwards. Yeah. In the credit in the trivia and. Also, she was losing hair from just being overwrought and sleepless nights. Now, they did say, and you had mentioned this, that the scene where she's going up the stairs backwards, that there was a report that she had done the World Guinness for most takes at like 127. Mm. But then there are people who were there on the crew that said it was more like 35 or 40.
But still,
either way, takes of going up the stairs. Yeah,
swinging a bat backwards. With Jack Nicholson in your face.
I was like, you're choking up too much on the bat, Chickie. You need to put your hands down.
Yeah, that's not... You're bunting. You need to swing out of the park.
Yeah. Yeah, and just like... your swinging was just to keep him from reaching you. You weren't actually touching him, so...
Yeah.
But yes... What about us that we were like, go down and hit him on the head again?
Horror movie rules, man. I mean, you hit somebody and they go down.
Double
you
tap.
Go and you double tap them. You just hit them
again. I think the thing is, though, because I was the one that was like, why wouldn't you just like bump? Because he's down the stairs. She could just run down and like bop him over the head. But to be fair, at that point in the film, she still was trying to like save him.
Yeah. That's
like, I'll
husband.
Get a doctor and come back for you.
Yeah, that's still her husband, and, you know, she knows that, or she thinks it's more than, he's just not crazy, he's just not well.
Right.
Yeah. There's something going on with him, yeah.
After his manuscript is read, yes.
Oh my God. I knew what was on the paper, and I knew that it was hundreds of pages of the same thing on the paper, but I think this time watching it was the first time I realized all the different patterning that was on the paper. And like you said, it took his secretary, Stanley Kubrick, one of his secretaries, like weeks to get all those pages typed. Because, you know, you can't print them out on a printer.
I would just send it to like a steno pool and be like, everybody, this is your assignment today. And it's like just a day of,
of typing.
Like a bunch of secretaries.
But I'm sure he'd want
it out.
I'm sure he'd want it all on the same typewriter. So it all looked the same.
He's such a detail fanatic, and plus he probably wants to destroy his assistant as well.
So. Yeah, just you know, just to do it.
Match the theme.
Yeah. But we were just a sadist.
He was, You know, some of those big time directors were. I'm hearing stories about Otto Preminger and reading books, and I'm like, God, what a complete asshole! And Kubrick was, as much as I love his movies, he was kind of the same way. He was just a
brutal
jerk. Although I did like, you know, because there is a documentary out, 237, that has a whole lot of Shining trivia and the whole conspiracy theories behind it. Cause,
yeah, tell about some of those.
The most notable one is that Danny, in the scene where room 237 is open, he's wearing an Apollo rocket
Apollo
sweater,
11.
Apollo 11 rocket shirt. And the conspiracy is that's Kubrick admitting that he faked the moon landing. by telling everybody that by showing that sweater that he was the one that did the, because that is the conspiracy theory that Stanley Kubrick faked the moon landing. He filmed it all. Gosh. And that is true. He did, but he was Stanley Kubrick, so he insisted they go on location to film.
Sounds like it.
But yeah, that's one of the theories. There's also theories concerning the carpet pattern, which I don't think was actually in the actual hotel. That was something for...
No, he actually, according to IMDb, he didn't want it to be typecast as any one hotel. So he literally sent people to like hundreds of hotels taking different pictures and designed them based on the ones he liked. So the bathroom was from like one hotel. Mm-hmm. The room in 237 is a different hotel. The hallway where the girls are mutilated is a different hotel. Mm. And the rug patterns are all from all around.
Yeah, they are very typical hotel patterns,
right? But each floor and each hall is different, although he did have make sure that all of the sound stages were connected so that Danny could do the little ride around without having to stop, so they could do it as a one take 40 times.
And I will say, as much as a jackass as he was to Shirley Duvall, he actually shielded Danny Lloyd, who was 6 at the time that this was filmed. He shielded him so much that Danny Lloyd says he did not see a complete version of the film until he was 17.
Yeah, he thought it was a drama. He didn't know it was a horror. There's a scene where Wendy accuses Jack of hurting him again and all this stuff, and she's holding him, and that's not Danny. That's actually a dummy. So
so he would be shielded from that, so he wouldn't have to hear parents fighting over him.
So probably the only weird thing for him was holding the knife.
Yeah,
the
red rum.
But still, it wasn't. Scene.
But it wasn't like horrific. Yeah. And the whole finger thing with Tony.
That was his idea.
That was his idea. He did that at his audition. He came up with the whole, he did the voice is different, but he came up with the little finger talking for Tony.
Yeah, what's kind of hard is because we know a lot of these key scenes and they've been tropized over the years, if that's a word, I've just decided it is.
It is.
that. It's hard to kind of suspend your knowledge and watch it as an uncut version
movie.
So, Tiffany, had you seen this before?
I saw it once, probably when I was in my 20s, so maybe like 10 years ago. And it was just kind of one of those people reference this movie all the time. I guess I should watch it. And I enjoyed it more the first time because obviously I had not seen it. But I did not know any of these things that we've been talking about prior to watching it, even this time. So
go ahead, admit Starnes Lord ruined it because he kept crying out like a little girl.
Man up, Matt.
It was scary. I don't think I was as jumpy as other movies, though. So.
Probably not helps that we not watched it at 1 o'clock in the afternoon and there was bright light shining in.
Yeah, that helped. No, for me, I think, this is the type of movie I miss, and we went to go see Summer of 84 recently, and it's just like, I think we said there, it's like they're not making these movies, well, Summer of 84, I guess they are, but very few, and that's the only...
That's a very small movie, though. It's not going to get a wide release.
It's like something like this, where it's more suspenseful, and the music is really a huge character in this. It's really well done, and it's like, I love Disney, and I love all the superhero movies. I love Star Wars. I'll go see that stuff a million times, but I do fear that it is crowding out movies like this getting released, at least on the big screen, which is a shame. So they might show up on a Netflix or a Hulu or something like that, but there's still not going to be enough of them.
You said you liked A Quiet Place, right?
I did like A Quiet, Quiet Place.
But that
place,
one did far better than they thought it would.
Right.
Yeah.
And it had John Krasinski behind it. So it was
and
kind
Get Out with Jordan Peele. Yeah. It's like these kind of movies exist.
Don't Breathe, but I was looking, I think that came up in a memory lately, and it was like 2 or 3 years ago already. And I'm like, wow, that seems like it was yesterday.
I know.
But it was,
But yeah, these suspenseful kind of like edge of your seat, not just blood and gore all over the place.
Yeah.
As much as I love my slasher films, and I do love my Friday the 13th, to me, those are just kind of goofy entertainment more than horror.
For you.
Yeah.
Like, I am so that person that will go home and become convinced that my apartment is on an Indian burial ground and that every weird noise I hear is like something coming to get me.
Honey, we're all on an Indian burial ground at some point.
This is true.
But Stephen King does tend to love his Indian burial grounds.
Yes. Yeah. I think that's why I have a thing about Indian burial grounds, because I remember watching, I mean, I'm not positive this is part of it, but I think it was like Pet Cemetery.
Pet Cemetery, oh, yeah.
I remember seeing Pet Cemetery on HBO when I was a kid.
Poltergeist, the whole neighborhood.
And I feel like Pet Cemetery is the movie that sort of like started me being freaked out as like, in general.
So cemeteries in New England in general are just different than down here. I have not run into the kind of cemeteries down here that we would run into all the time, because they were, I mean, that's Plymouth Rock. That's where people settled, not only there, but coming down north from Canada or going up. So there's tons of little cemeteries. Like my dad is buried in a cemetery that probably has 100 bodies in it.
Yeah.
You know, that's it. And even those 100 are like shared plots. So there's like, you know, stacked neatly on top of each other.
That's right.
My dad's cemetery is probably less than 1,000 square feet. And it's just a very small little place. And that's very common in New England. So you really can't throw a tombstone without coming across another cemetery in New England. I'm not surprised.
Mm. But yeah, this I love this film. It has become a kind of a Hollywood or a Halloween tradition for me. Airsley usually shows it as part of their retro. They're not this year because the new Halloween movie is coming out. I think they're doing Halloween instead. But any chance I get to see this on the big screen, I take, because I love the way Kubrick films. He is incredibly addicted to symmetry.
Right. Yeah, that was something I noticed. Like how Shelley Duvall's head was perfectly framed between two windows for one of her scenes. And then Jack Nicholson's head was perfectly framed in the middle of a wall tapestry in one of his scenes. And that continued to happen where they're always in the middle of, because I'm kind of OCD about symmetry too. Although I appreciate the offset, but I noticed it. I really noticed it. Not that it took me out of it, but I was like, oh, wow, his head is like right in between.
And the way when the ball goes to Danny, it goes right down the middle of the carpet pattern.
Which, according to IMDb, took 50 turns to do that.
So. That doesn't surprise me. It's not just thrown at him. It has to go right down the middle of that carpet pattern.
It's rolled slowly. Yeah. But that reminds me of the scene in Trolls 2 at the end. But anyway, go ahead.
Yeah, because that's up there with your...
But I was just tennis ball thing. So.
Yeah. Yeah. How about Ready Player One?
Yeah. With the whole homage to The Shining, which isn't in the book, Ready Player One, incidentally.
But that was probably the coolest scene out of that movie to me.
So, yeah, that was a good scene, because that movie was not very good, in my opinion. But
it's later day Spielberg.
But H, the character of H, and her being afraid was pretty funny.
I don't think you've seen Ready Player One.
No, I have not. Oh. I was sick. That's a reoccurring theme, unfortunately. So my thing was, the things that bothered me was, so you know those iconic scenes, and you know, I've always seen The Shining probably as an edited version, so this was my first time watching it without stopping, except for that one time I had to pee. But, you know, this scene of her in the cover, you know, the Oshkosh overall jumper with the green and white checked and the creamy turtleneck, you know, that's just an iconic vision of her. So once you know that she's in that outfit, you know that the
shit's going down.
You know, here's Johnny is coming and all that kind of stuff. But what bothered me is the scene with Danny with taking the knife and stuff like that. It's like, how the heck is she asleep in this house
at all,
knowing that he's in that room? I just couldn't be it. I would be like, you know, first of all, as Tiffany said, double tap him on the head when he's down the stairs, but then like searching through his pockets before I was dragging him to see where the parts of the thing is,
and considering, you know, because we notice here that she was doing all of the work.
Right. Now, granted, he didn't tell her that he'd sabotaged the cat, the snow cat, until after she had locked him in there. But why wouldn't you immediately rush to that, you know, to the
radio?
The radio.
Radio. Thank you.
And she's got to know where the spare parts are.
Right. Because, of course, there's going to be spare parts.
Yeah.
Come on.
You would think.
It's a good plot device, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a good plot device. My problem with this movie, I do think it's an A movie. It's not quite A plus, but Wendy always seemed, and this is in the book too, she always just seemed like a very passive character. She doesn't do a whole lot to, as you said, she falls asleep. How could you fall asleep when your husband's crazy and you just locked him in the dry storage?
I think that I sort of attributed it to stress. I do think that, like, when her son's like, rah, 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 you know, like, really loud, like, I'm like, come on, bitch. Let's wake up now. But I just sort of took it as exhaustion because she's, like, she doesn't know what's going on. If there's a woman, you know, or if it was really her husband, what the fuck's happening to her husband? You know, her son is now Tony, the boy that lives in his mouth.
Disturbing.
Yeah, part of it, too, understanding that Kubrick was very defensive and protective of Danny. You know, there were several times during the movie when I was like, and where the fuck is the kid? You know, but understanding that Kubrick didn't want him part of that filming, he just left him out of there. But I still would be like, if you're asleep in the bed, and granted she had her robe on over her clothes, so at least I gave her credit for that, but why the heck isn't your son in the bed with you?
And why would you be in that room? Because he knows that's your husband knows
good
that's
point.
Your room.
By the way, I never thought about that, but good
there's
point.
There's like 600 rooms in this hotel. Why would you go back to that room where he knows you live? Just go somewhere else.
Yeah.
This is a huge hotel with lots and lots and lots of hidey spaces. You could hide from him a good long time.
Oh, yeah.
It was kind of amazing how quickly people were found.
Yeah.
And I'm like, this thing is huge.
Well, and that was my problem with Halloran. Why the heck are you shouting out?
Hello? You know things are going down. You know shit's going down.
If you truly have The Shining where you don't have to talk aloud, then you can just ask Danny.
Where are you?
In your head, where are you?
True.
And not call out.
And not get an axe to the chest. Which, I mean, he was wearing a lot of clothes. Yeah. That wouldn't have gone too deep.
Axe to the chest, but it hit my vest. Sorry, that was my rapper moment.
And can we do a shout out, man, to Halloran's Florida digs? That was some.
Let's just be clear, though. That is like the bachelor pad that doesn't get the chicks because no chick can bring back.
No chick can walk and go, no.
Yeah. No chick can bring back painting.
Also, the guy's probably looking at his 60. It seemed like he was in 60s there. I don't know if that's true, but it just seemed older.
Why did we
have to
look at his feet?
Because symmetry. The TV was framed between his feet.
I don't think those were his toes.
No, because he flipped the camera around. Those were his toes. Any Kubrick film, there's this symmetry that goes on. Everything has to be in the middle of the goddamn frame.
I do remember the old Johnny Carson Tonight Show, though. They'd have those little artist paintings in between, like segues to commercials.
Yeah, and I'd always try to figure out how that met.
Yeah, but one of them was, I remember one time, was the feet looking at the TV, because that's how you watched the show, and it was, maybe it tied back into the line, too.
So, episode 237, our review of The Shining.
What grade would we all give this? I've already given my grade of an A.
I'd say an A, yeah. I think it still holds up, and if they release something like that in the theater today, I'd be really happy. I mean, I miss that, and I miss, like, the Hitchcock stuff too. It's like that stuff was just startle you, and it's like, oh, or psychologically mess with you.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't like horror, so I appreciate the value of it, but I don't know that I would be able to grade it because I knew about it before I watched it. So, am I going to sit down and watch it again? Only if we start a new podcast and get to episode 237. I don't know.
We'll have to do 2001 on our episode 2001.
That'd be awesome.
If we make it to 2001, I'm going to be 70 years old.
If we start doing daily, we can get there.
Tiffany, did you write it?
I'm going to kind of like go along with your thinking. I mean, I do think it's a really good film. It's not my type of genre typically. But I feel like I can't really give it just a grade based on not knowing anything about it or anything like that. I mean, I enjoy the film though. I do think that Shelley Duvall, even before like things start to get bad, is like super annoying to me. And I'm like, I just totally see how she would drive somebody crazy. This is the nicest hotel I've ever seen.
Is there something about her voice?
Like, oh my God, shut up.
How you doing today? this is the Overlook Hotel. Over.
No, you know what I have to say, and I know we're giving it grades, but that scene where she's talking on the CB to the guy at the forest was the most realistic scene.
Yeah,
to because
she didn't want to put that down.
No. She was like, "How you doing today? I've been alone in this hotel for a month and a half, and my husband's yelling at me. Talk to me. I need human contact." Yeah. Mm-hmm. The most, I think that was one of the most telling scenes of exactly how remote and exhausting it was. So.
And of course, the guy's just like, I got to do my job, lady, so I'm going to let you go.
But he did talk to her for a minute. Yeah. And so I think he knew, you know, but I thought that was one of the best realistic scenes because I would totally be that person. Like, I would be checking in with them every day.
How are you? How's your wife? How's your kids? How's the dog?
It's windy again. What'd we just want to check on stuff. Yeah.
What did you think about that Days of Our Lives episode?
I mean, it's a good point, by the way. I think that would probably be like, if I don't check in with you, there's something wrong.
Yeah.
So I need that to be, because we are in a very remote place with very bad weather.
Little kid.
Yeah. And I would think that would be set up beforehand.
Right.
That just seems like a, you know, in hindsight, it seems like a natural thing to do. It's like, we've got a 6-year-old. If I haven't checked in with you in 48 hours, could you send a snowcat up?
My other thing is, okay, so Scatman Crothers decides the only logical course of action is to fly from Florida back to Denver. And it's like, he could have said, hey, would you mind taking the Bobcat? I know it's a big storm. Could you go up there and just check on them?
It's interesting that they didn't offer. They're like, we'll call. Oh, nobody answered. Oh, we can try again later, I guess, if you want. It's like,
it's a huge
can you motherfuckers go up there? You're the police.
That's your job.
The only reason why I would say that he would say that he couldn't go up there is because he knew more about the history of the hotel than the movie let on. Because he seemed like somebody who'd been there for a while.
Who, Scatman Crothers?
Yeah.
Yeah, but at the same time, this is a hotel where one of their previous caretakers axed his family and stacked them like cordwood. Right. So you would think if they haven't heard from them, they'd be like, you know, let's go check the Overlook so we're not going to find, you know, two little girls stacked like cordwood.
Yeah.
Plus, I mean, to the point, like, none of these people are doctors. So, I mean, it could just literally be like, somebody has pneumonia and they've passed it, you know, they're all sick.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Can't get out of bed, you know, whatever. Like, it could just be anything.
I mean, yeah.
But I guess we would have a movie if there was, you know, a lot of due diligence happening.
So, as somebody who didn't see Passengers, but I know you guys did, so that scene at the bar was totally.
Yeah.
And by the way, as I watched it, I was like, this is so like Passengers. Like, I kept expecting
Michael Sheen.
Michael Sheen. To like come out as his like robot
self. No, instead it was Tyrell.
But it was a nod. It was a nod.
Yeah,
in my opinion. Oh. So
yeah, it was very, very stylistically
a nod. Yeah.
I would say now too, it's like the question that Jack Nicholson didn't ask was kind of telling that he didn't ask during the interview for the job, what happened to the person before me? Every interview that's like in your 10 questions, has anybody had this job before you? Why aren't they here, or what made them successful? It's like none of that's there. And he's a teacher and a writer.
Yeah.
And it's like, it's because he's already tuned in to the hotel. And it's like, I didn't catch that. And I was just like, wait a second. Yeah, this is.
And he just seems to take the whole, well, the previous caretaker, you know, butchered his family and shot himself in the head.
Well, it's they like, said back in 1970. Right?
Yeah, but this is only like
10 years ago.
10 years later.
Yeah.
So it's
I'm not disagreeing, yeah, but I'm just saying.
It's like
so has there not been a caretaker since that last person?
Well, that's what I'm saying. The question's missing. Yeah. Why wouldn't you?
Who is the caretaker?
That should immediately be your follow-up.
Yeah,
like,
who's the caretaker in between?
Who's been doing it now, and why aren't they doing it, and what's going on?
Well, they did kind of mention that there was a couple times they didn't do a caretaker, and then they found that the house went into disrepair.
Yeah.
Ullman mentions that in the beginning. Okay.
Which would that would just seem like stupidity to leave it just alone.
Yeah.
All by its lonesome poor hotel.
I think that's why he was explaining people had to live there as opposed to just coming in and checking on it.
So. He couldn't get up the road. Yeah.
Right.
And I would just think, yeah, I would think a hotel that size, you'd need more than one person.
Yeah. But I'm thinking you'd have like a little crew, but it'd be like maintenance type people and stuff. Not like, oh, you're a writer? Perfect.
Well, think about if a tree had crashed through those huge windows that they did, had no boards on. It's like, Jack Nicholson, there's nothing he could do other than try to board it up.
You know, he's not chainsaw the tree, and then just try and put something over the broken window.
And my other thing was he probably would have had a shotgun because bears and all those other you're going to go out and check. It's like you need some defense.
Recently there was a viral video of a bear walking into the Stanley Hotel.
He came in through the window and just walked in.
Hey there, can I get a room?
What scared me was like the woman that or whoever was behind the front desk taking the picture, and then the bear got closer.
Yes.
And then that picture stops. And I'm like, so does this mean this is when you finally ran the fuck away? Like you should have from the beginning.
Listen, a bear comes into the hotel, get behind something before taking. Oh,
yeah. Well, you could see the counter. You could see that they were behind the counter, but that's not going to stop. Bears are going to climb that or destroy it.
Yeah.
But yeah, just walked in.
I will say this. This is where I can pull out the "It's All About Joey" story. When I worked at a hotel, and I did for a while, and there's lots of stories to go with it, but there was an alarm that went off one time in the hotel. And so part of my job was I had to call all the people in their rooms and let them know that there was a fire in the other tower and they needed to evacuate, or they had a choice because it was the one tower, not the second, that they could stay. But, you know, and we were not supposed to leave the front desk. And evidently I was too calm. And so when I called the fire department, they weren't sure whether or not it was an actual fire.
Oh my gosh.
Even though the first, like, so the rules when there's a fire were on the inside cabinet behind our heads. So I turned around and opened it. And the first one, it says, remain calm. And I did remain calm, but evidently I was too calm. So I got yelled at by the assistant manager that I was too calm. And the fire department almost didn't come.
Oh my gosh.
Anyway, on that note, so 237 special edition.
Yeah. Yes. And if you want to know more about The Shining, go watch the documentary 237.
Yes.
I think it's room 237. Okay. It's 237. But,
I'll look that up. That's
great. All right. Well, thank you guys all. We will be taking 1 week break. You'll have some Dragon Con interviews, but the four of us here will be taking a break because Star and Swords and I are heading to Atlanta, and we're going to come back and be a little tired.
No.
I'm going to Boston immediately after Atlanta.
Yeah, he's actually going on a bit back-to-back. We've done two conventions, then we're going on our vacation to Dragon Con, and then Matt is going to another convention that's actually work-related. So we're going to be a little tired. Yeah. So we'll have some special edition episodes, but the four of us will be back in 2 weeks. So thank you guys for listening.
Thank you.
Bye.
Au revoir.
You've been listening to Guardians of the Geekery. Find us on the web at guardiansofthegeekery.com and everywhere fine podcasts are found. Support the Charlotte Geeks at patreon.com/charlottegeeks. Tune in next time for another exciting adventure on Guardians of the Geekery.